Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Before CGI came along and ruined everything, Chris Chitty was a world leader in the field of making realistic robot creatures for movies. He created the sheep in Babe, sharks in a Jackie Chan film, even a mechanical kangaroo. These days he works in other emerging fields, but will also be familiar to many for his role as Dr. Robotech in the kids' show Let's Get Inventin'. Chris Chitty was speaking this week at the oddly named Blow Festival in Wellington, where I caught up with him.
So this week you gave a talk as part of the Blow Festival. It's called about the suspension of disbelief in movies and how it relates to robotics, because you used to have an illustrious career in film, didn't you? You made the sheep in Babe. You made sharks for a Jackie Chan movie. What else have you done?
Well, in that line, you've sort of done the giant octopus for 20,000 leagues and quite a lot of weird pieces of equipment, motion control rigs, and various other things that. And also, we tended to advise little people on how to do things because, from my point, I don't like doing things twice. If I've made something, I will do something different next time, or I want to change what I've done so much that it doesn't necessarily fit into the film.
So, I mean, you don't want to become the world's foremost expert in making sheep and just day in, day out make sheep?
No. The reason that I did movies was because I was really interested in making things, and I was really interested in how people responded to those sorts of things. But I was also really interested in how other animals responded to those sorts of things. And so people gave us a lot of money to make really amazing things. And so like with the sheep, we were filming robotic sheep right next to real animals. And so the real animals had to be able to accept those sheep in to their fold, effectively. So they smelt the same, and most of the time when they were running, they were breathing, their eyes were moving, and they just basically sat there and sort of vibrated like the other sheep do when an animal's alive. They have all these movements, and it's those sorts of things which are with the suspension of disbelief, or either kind of the other way around, where we believe things and then cross, if we don't see the things we need, then we disbelieve it. So we're kind of optimistic things. I actually found a person who passed away one time, and it was quite quick to sort of, you look at this, they're not breathing, they're not doing this, they're not doing that, they're not doing that, and they have waxy coloured skin, they've died. And it's that sort of instant observation, those instant things that we see that we don't actually realise. I mean, I've been studying this for years and years, and there's still things that I don't realise about what we do.
Getting back to the sheep, a sheep, to try and fool a sheep, is it easy to fool a sheep or is it to fool a person?
When we had sort of like groups of sheep together, we had robotic ones and real ones, the real ones would sometimes like bang their heads to try and move our ones out of the way because our ones didn't eat the grass. And so they'd build a bit more grass around our ones' feet, and so they were just nudging them out of the way. But then the trainers we had, they would be looking after the real sheep, and they'd come along and they'd go, and then they'd maybe use their knee to try and move one of our robotic sheep, forgetting or not realising it was a fake one. So they were to that level that people didn't realise they weren't real. And the only reason we knew they weren't real was because we had to, we sort of count along the line, oh, that was not real, that was not real, and that sort of stuff.
To make a sheep, in that sort of sense, the sheep's baby, how many different movements do they need to have to make it realistic?
Well, probably about 32 moves for it to be able to be filmed reasonably safely from all angles. And then you can have other ones which are specialist ones, which might have, say, more moves so that the tongue might roll and move from left to right, whereas the other ones don't require that. And they might have to poo or something like that, or have to have a really expressive face, because we were slightly humanising some of the animals, and you have to do it with quite a lot of, I suppose, respect or something that the sheep has to look real, yet have some of those little tiny subtleties that we use in facial expression to communicate with. Because when you look at somebody, you're actually getting a heck of a lot of information, but you don't realise it.
This is a very similar discussion as to one I had with an animator from Pixar recently about trying to make a mouse look like a mouse but also look like a human without looking like a human mouse, if you're not, finding that right balance.
It's actually really, really hard, and particularly with what we used to use, the sort of the mechatronics, the robotics ones, is to try and fit all that physical stuff inside. We used to say, okay, well, it has to look like this. No compromises, and So sometimes it might be the actuator for a particular move might be, you know, in the body of the animal rather than in the head or something like that. But we were able to pack an awful lot into some of those animals. So.
What's your favourite from the movies? What's your favourite bad piece of robotics? The worst that you've seen that you just love because it's so cringeworthy?
I don't actually know. I'll have to have a bit of a think about it.
I'm thinking of some of the early Jaws films, you know, when you get a huge big shark coming out. I mean, it was the 70s, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Jaws is a bit sad, but they were kind of doing what they thought was good. Actually, I think more the explosions and those sorts of things that they have, and they're so corny, and, you know, like this car will come up over fall down a cliff, and it looks like a car at the bottom, you know, it's recognisable. When we watch TV, and we watch the news, and we watch the sort of YouTube of real things happening, and, you know, if the car's going at 120 miles an hour, and it hits something, there are bits all the way down the road, and it keeps going down the road, and most of it goes down the road. You know, I like that sort of racing car, the Formula One type things. You're looking on a long lens, so you don't really see how fast it really is going, but all of a sudden there's a real little bump, and then gently appears to be floating in the air, and sort of flips over a couple of times, really, really gracefully, and hits the ground, and in a fraction of a second, it's completely disassembled. And we see those things, and so we know that that's really what happens, and we're aware of the physics around us, and that's how we survive. We know how long it takes us to cross the road, as we look down the road one way, take a couple of pictures, look down the other way, take a look quickly, and then we calculate the difference in those pictures. We work out how fast a car's going. We also take up other details. Is the person looking at us? Do I hear a really heavy exhaust, so the person is accelerating perhaps, and maybe the car's up at the front? And those are all those things we take about our physical environment. We go, is the road wet? What shoes am I wearing? Am I carrying this shopping? Can I get across the road in time?
So you say in sort of robotics, there's quite a lot of psychology involved to try and convince people to suspend disbelief.
Yes, there is a huge amount. And again, it's the other way around. We're saying, what do we need to show them so that they must believe it? Because your body, your head will sort of accept something if there's a certain amount of cues in there. I've done this sort of bungee jump simulator, and in that situation, we were very worried that people were going to be very critical about being tipped upside down because you're in this little module and you've got head mount display and all stereo head mount and stereo sound. So we could see where the preliminary video was and where the person was looking because the video would say, oh, don't look down, and immediately the camera would be was shot down and so these people are seeing an image of down, and they would look down, and then we'd have, oh, there's your screens over there, and the camera would swing to the right and the sound would be in the right ear and the people would turn that way. So we were actually completely controlling the person. When we got for them to jump, we go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and on one, we'd actually start tipping it. And people would get a fright because they weren't expecting it, and then they'd go into sort of like survival mode, which was knocking away their critical things and going, holy cactus, I wasn't expecting that. And it's a bit like if you're going to dive into a swimming pool, just as you're about to dive and someone pushes you, all of a sudden, the last place you want to be is in the swimming pool, and you start panicking. And so it's been a trick.
You say working on bungee jump simulators now, because I take it that somewhere along the line you stopped working in movies, and I presume it had something to do with CGI, that they're fearful.
I not wanting to do things again, you know, not making lots of sheep or things like that, but also seeing CGI come along, because in Babe there was a small amount of CG and CGI, and I thought we're not going to get the budgets we'd like, and we need to make these really good things. But also, I sort of said to myself, we can achieve these. We can make this convincing, even though it's 30 foot high, and people look at that and think it's real. And a lot of people go, you know, we'd say, oh, we made this sheep, and they go, what sheep? And they just say, the one speaking English. And they go, fair enough, you know.
But did CGI kill robotics, like, to all intents and purposes, in the movies?
Yeah, I think it did. In the area we were interested in, and there's still a lot in sort of prosthetics and things like that, and sort of big, you know, reality of monsters and things like that. But I wanted to work on the other senses, the other human senses. So that's why looking at simulators, and also medical simulators as well, where you're sort of trying to fool a machine. So I've done some work on the restrictive airways, and so that you're trying to fool the machine, the anesthesia machine, into thinking that it's actually on a real person, and the real person has a particular complaint. So we're not trying to fool a person, we're actually trying to form the machine that looks after the person.
So the analytical tools, like the heart rates and that sort of thing.
So trying to reproduce those sorts of things and forward. But I've also done some research on skin colour change, but I won't talk too much about that because it's seriously interesting.
And I also understand that in a completely different field, that you're Dr. Robotech on Let's Get Inventing, the show has been going quite a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We've done four series. I think it's about 63 episodes. So that's all pretty good. Because I used to have the company Robotech Technology was the one that made all the sheep and things like that, and I used to get invited to different parts of the world to talk about robotics, and they didn't quite know what to call me in different places. They said they called me Dr. Robotech. And so when I got brought in to help with the initial development of the first series, I sort of ended up with the name Dr. Robotech, and that sort of stuck, and that's a brilliant, and we've sort of been helping kids come up with, develop their ideas and so on. The level of the kids' understanding and even the presentations they give us to say what their ideas are have jumped in those sort of 4 years are incredible. Before it would be like a little sketch and maybe a couple of lines. Now we get a video. Oh, this is what it looks like. Here's a prototype and here's some sketches and, this is how it can be commercially used. They have just come up, blossom. It's been really encouraging.
So the future is in safe hands, you think?
Oh, it is. I know that. It's actually right. I used to get kind of a bit worried. You see on the news, this happening, that's happening. And then I met all these kids, and they were just brilliant. And I just, it's like, you just think, oh, cool. It's going to be a good place, and with some really good people. So
thank you very much.
That's Chris Chitty. After the break, how to cash in on the social network phenomenon and how a virtual lung is helping to save lives.